The Open Source Creative Podcast, episode 57, SIGGRAPH Recap.
Oh, we're going to toast marshmallows, are we?
Could be.
This is the Open Source Creative Podcast, a podcast where I ramble on about creativity, process, and open source software. I'm Jason Van Gumster, your host and driver on the road to creative freedom. You might notice, for anybody who's watching this on video, this is not my usual background. There's reasons for this, and I guess it's worth sharing. So I travel full-time. And in case you didn't know that, my family and I, we live in a motorhome, and we travel all over mostly the U.S. And we've been doing that for, it'll be 5 years in October. And recently, we discovered that we have some roof damage. To the point where we may have to replace all of the roof. Which means there's water penetration, possible mold, and some other stuff that has to get resolved. It's trying to see if we can get that resolved, but in the meantime, we maybe have gotten, I have to get a replacement RV. In the meantime, I'm in this space, which is neither of those RVs. This is a shared space that I'm in now, and I'm setting up shop, and hopefully you won't be seeing this background for too much, but you'll see it for a bit. Again, if you're watching video, if you're hearing this in audio, then you're not going to hear it at all. Actually, you're going to hear it. If you are listening to this in audio, you're not going to see the background at all. And I'll try, you'll just see me. You won't see me gesticulating and talking about it and stumbling over my words as I'm doing right now. In any case, weird recap on that, because what I'm actually talking about today is, this week, is SIGGRAPH. I was at SIGGRAPH last week. It ended on Friday. This, as I record, this is the 29th of July, and I wanted to give I did a whole episode about what I was going to do when I was there. I might as well do a whole episode about what happened actually while there. And so the start of it was, the first day of it was pretty much all the open source days hosted by the ASWF. Again, ASWF is the Academy Software Foundation. They're a division of the Motion Picture Academy. I think that's the actual term. And they, you know, have a whole suite of open source tools and those sort of things that are associated with that. And we talked about that. Now, I will note that the vast majority of the tools that are under the umbrella of the ASWF are libraries. There are very few. Two minor exceptions would be OpenRV and XStudio. I believe both of those are under the ASWF umbrella. Those actually are user-facing applications for review of produced footage. So stuff like dailies, right? So if you're producing something and you want to share that, your production progress, you have a tool like OpenRV or a tool like XStudio where you can watch your output in high quality, but you also have things like frame rates and other things that you can do a little bit of diagnostic looking color spaces and these sort of things that are necessary for production. That's built in. That's part of the ASWF, but it's not the majority of the tools. Majority of the tools are infrastructure and libraries and those sort of things. Examples for that would be OpenUSD, Alembic. No, actually, Alembic's not part of it, but OpenEXR, OpenTimeline.io, OpenPBR. There's a whole suite of these things. And most of the talks that were going on at the open source days focused around these tools and things that are going on with them. And Again, most of my conversations happened in the hallway because that's where a lot of the, for me, a lot of the interesting conversations tend to happen. There's a lot of great presentations, a lot of interesting things and developments going on that most of the talks were updates about what's happening and what's going on there. I will say that the Blender folks, Francesco and Sebastian, gave a talk about Material X and OpenPUBR as they relate to Blender. Now, one of the things I'm going to say is that, well, two parts. One, let's talk about their talk. Their talk was pretty cool. It was about getting support for Material X and OpenPBR in Blender. And you would think that that's not, well, duh, you should totally do that, right? Blender should be the reference platform for these sort of things. But the Blender Foundation, the Blender development team is, and I think I've said this before, I classify them as being pathologically independent. They don't necessarily, they want to be able to develop, Blender development happens stupid fast, right? And so they don't necessarily want to be hamstrung by the requirements of an external library. This happened in the past. OpenSubdiv was one of the earliest examples of this. A number of years ago, Pixar, they basically looked at all the places, all the applications that were doing subdivision services and said, you're all doing it wrong. Here's a library, an open source library, OpenSubdiv, that shows how to do it right. You should just integrate this in your application. And so that got integrated in Maya, got integrated in 3D Studio Max, and ultimately integrated in Blender. Problem with it, though, however, was that there were some features that Blender had for their subdivision services that OpenSubdiv didn't support. For instance, Blender doesn't care if your meshes are non-manifold. OpenSubdiv cared. And so that was a friction point. And so when you integrate that library into Blender, suddenly you lose features unless you send a patch upstream to add support for those things. And they agree that that support needs to be in there. Fortunately, that happened, but it took a while for it to process. So for a while there, Blender was running with two different subdivision surface algorithms. One was the OpenSubdiv one, and the other was Blender's internal legacy subdivision surface modifier. And I think only within the last handful of years has OpenSubdiv gotten full parity with the stuff that Blender can do, or at least that's kind of the way that it's shaken out. And so now it's all fine and good, and you export something from Blender with subdivision surface, with using the subdivision surface modifier. If that's supported by the interchange format, then that will also be faithfully reproduced in Maya, Houdini, Max, Cinema 4D, etc. So this is a long-winded way of saying that Material X sort of falls in that same sort of realm where Material X supports base materials across multiple applications. Now, every different application has a different way of handling, every renderer actually has a different way of handling materials and those sorts of things. And so having this standardized base across all of them is a non-trivial problem. And Material X has been doing a very good job of supporting that. And PBR, physically based rendering materials, are sort of a subset of what is supported within Material X. Blender historically has not been a faithful representation of, has not had a faithful representation of what's in Material X or OpenPBR. So the presentation that was done by Francesco, and I'd say mostly by Sebastian, was about getting that support in Blender. It's not like Blender doesn't want to support these standards, doesn't want to support these open formats. It's, on one level, you have the situation like with OpenSubdiv, where OpenSubdiv doesn't do the things that Blender didn't do the things that Blender does. And Material X has a lot of things that, Blender does. Some Blender materials aren't supported by Material X. Likewise, there's things that are in Material X that every other application assumes are there that Blender doesn't have yet. And a standardized PBR stack is part of that. And so this is how they were working on, they gave a presentation on how they were addressing that. Part of that was in defining the standard using OSL and trying to adhere to the results of OpenPBR with that. Part of that was in using OSL, which is a shading language that Cycles recognizes within Blender, and it's programmatic, and it is GPU accelerated if you have an optics capable video card. Otherwise, it's all CPU based. Regardless, it is more programmatic and an easy way of implementing it, easier way of implementing a shader than getting into the SVM, the native shader language that Cycle uses within Blender. And so they implemented it both ways, one through OSL and one through SVM. And as it turns out, SVM was, their SVM implementation was more faithful to the reference, which actually didn't exist when they started. And Adobe actually put that out put out a reference while they were working on it. And then the OSL one revealed, one, it wasn't close, and two, probably because there were some bugs in the way that OSL was implemented within Blender. So they're working on getting those things together so that ultimately Blender can have more proper Material X support, which is part of also USD support, which is a big conversation point, not only for ASWF, but for the next day when the Blender community meetup, Birds of a Feather, happened. I haven't gotten there yet. So that was a big component of that. And of course, throughout the entire open source days, there's an undercurrent talking about machine learning algorithms and which for everybody else, that's AI. And how they can be implemented and used within studio environments. Because again, the concern there is making sure that it's studio safe. And that means that you're not infringing on anyone else's IP, you're not giving away your IP, and you know, any security measures are being monitored and watched and those sort of things. And there's a lot of conversation about how that plays out. And so again, by and large, the open source days is very technical component of the conference, but it was very nice. And I will say overall, and this is where I can talk about SIGGRAPH, the SIGGRAPH conference this year overall relative to previous years, because I've been going to SIGGRAPH since 2003. And it's been varying in sizes across that 20 plus years. And this was probably the smallest SIGGRAPH that I've ever been to. This was in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Convention Center. I've been to it before where the entire convention center was basically filled up with SIGGRAPH attendees and courses and these sorts of things. This year was substantially smaller in terms of attendance and those sort of things. Part of that is probably what was run into this. They were, the SIGGRAPH organizers likely ran into the same thing that happened earlier this year with GDC and Beacon Austin, and that right now some folks just don't want to travel stateside. So it was very small, but I think the cool thing about it was, one, it was cozy. So if you wanted to meet somebody or wanted to get in touch with somebody, it was not so hard to actually find them and talk to them, which was very cool, because there's some, and the people who were there were like, these are your stalwarts. These are the people who are very passionate about computer graphics and all the technology stack and all these sort of things. And I will say that the conference in a way got back to its core roots of being about the research, about the technical components of computer graphics, not just the glitz and the media and entertainment glamour and those sort of things. It was really about the research, and some of it not necessarily realistic or immediately applicable for practical use in a lot of scenarios, but there are these kernels of really cool bits and pieces that could be used all over the place. I don't think I've been to a SIGGRAPH that had more posters. For anyone who has never been to a SIGGRAPH, posters are kind of like SIGGRAPH's version of a science fair. And there's all these institutes that are doing research in computer graphics, the students or the researcher people, which a lot of them are students, some of them are the professors, they have the poster sessions. One, they post posters of their research, the results of their research, for everyone to look at and take photos of and those sorts of things. And then they actually have technical papers, talks about a subset of those. And there's some really, really interesting ones in there that were worth looking at. Again, there are a few of them that were like, okay, yeah, you could do that, sure. But the fact that was so prevalent this year relative to the size of, you know, the number of birds of a feathers or courses or general talks or the exhibition, the paper sort of dominated in terms of how much was there, which is really cool to see. And I even got one that was related to my onomatopoeia t-shirt because it was a paper on translating with text decoration comic book and manga onomatopoeias from Japanese to English. So whatever boom is, for instance, in Japanese, just illustrated within a comic, how do you do the English version of that and stay true to the design? And trying to do that in an automated way, that's within the realm of computer graphics. So super cool stuff. I got a picture of it with me and my goofy t-shirt. So that was fun. The Blinder Birds of a Feather was really good. There were a lot. This is the first one that Francesco handled solo because Tom was not there. But that was cool still because a lot of the same community ethos was there. A lot of the conversations were there. A lot of the general discussions and the full round of introductions for the entire room. All of that was there and it was very cool. You got to see people from all over the place. A lot of folks, again, because the research backing, there's a lot of academics. There's like people from maybe 11 different universities by my count. Number of people from different studios, some folks from toolmakers, applications, some from hardware manufacturers, those sorts of things. There's basically a wide gamut of everything from media and entertainment to other industries in this space, seeing what's going on with Blender and seeing each other and sharing information and having conversations. It was really, really fantastic. I enjoyed doing that. I will say there is one thing that I'm a little disappointed by with the way with how it was handled in the organization of the event. And full disclosure, I was able to be part of the review committee for a number of talks and those sort of things. I didn't get to see all of them, obviously, but I was able to review a handful of them for entry into SIGGRAPH. However, I didn't get to obviously see all of them, and that doesn't mean I had any final decision whatsoever on anything. But I will say one of the things I found that was kind of disappointing was the educators forum. In previous years, the educator forum was something I really enjoyed going to. You'd go, even somebody like me who is not always in the realm of academia, right? I've taught at universities, I've given workshops at universities, but I don't consider myself to be a university professor, for instance, not professionally, at least. I practice at it, but I still always enjoyed going to the educator forum because you'd see examples of student work. You'd see struggles that real educators have, whether they're in academics or just giving workshops and training on how do you convey information to students? How do you talk about the latest things happening technology-wise or the latest sort of hiring trends and those sort of things? You'd see a very wide gamut of conversations. And starting last year's SIGGRAPH in Vancouver, I noticed that I guess a whole day's worth of the educators forum was dedicated to specific talks by software and hardware vendors rather than talks by educators. So you'd have Autodesk giving a talk about Maya in the classroom or whatever their latest tool is going to be in the classroom, or you'd have NVIDIA talking about their hardware and their use for it, or Epic talking about Unreal being used for as part of education platform. And really they struck me as being, let's have an hour and a half sales pitch from whatever this organization is because maybe they're paying for it or something. I don't know. But they did that last year and I didn't like it then. And they sort of leaned into that again this year as for one of the days of the educator forum. And I probably should have brought it up and talked to the organizers about that to find out why that was their decision, or if that was a conscious decision, or if it's just something that kind of happened. And maybe there's some underlying mechanics. Maybe there weren't people who were going to the other ones or like that. Or I don't actually know why that decision was made, but it's very clear that there was a whole day that was dedicated to, I'm going to say, sales pitches from industry to education. And the reason why that bothers me, one, I don't like being sold to. But two, if you have a day like that, you have no opportunity for open source tools to be listed as an option, right? Maybe they assume that well, they're there and everybody knows about them, but that's also not the case. So, you can't ha in that part of the educator forum, you don't have the opportunity to have anybody from the Blender side of things giving a talk, or anybody who's working with Krita, for instance, or OpenTunes, or any of the open source tools that are used in the same space. They don't get exposure to educators, to let maybe new educators who aren't familiar with open source know that that's even an option, because they're not industry standard or whatever. And that's clearly not the case, especially when it comes to Blender, because at this point in time, there's literally no studio that doesn't have Blender in their pipeline somewhere. Likewise, I can imagine you'll see more penetration from let's say penetration, like it's a market penetration sort of thing, but more usage of things like Krita and Inkscape in particular in those spaces, because they're looking at 2D, they're looking at hand drawn, they're looking at vectors and those sort of things. And there is value in making sure that educators know that these tools exist, know that they're actually in use and viable for use for production, but they're not. If you have these industry-based sessions in the educator forum, you never have that. There's no opportunity for these educators to be made aware of these tools, which I think is unfortunate and kind of sucks. Rant over. I will say that's one of the things I was displeased about with the way it was managed at this event and last year's event as well. And so I ended up not participating in the educators forum nearly as much as I've had in previous years. I did get to have a fun conversation. I'll say the expo, the exhibition was substantially smaller than previous years. You didn't see a lot of the booths that you've come to. There was no motion capture. Maybe one, but they didn't have the big like motion capture booth where somebody's jumping around on a trampoline or any of that. That wasn't there. There wasn't that kind of showmanship theater to the booths this year that we've seen in previous years. There was, I think it was through Dell, a walking, talking robot. No, not talking. Just walking. It was a little creepy because the way it was programmed is it would basically just randomly find a per like choose a person and start following them throughout the conference. And I literally saw one student volunteer running away, screaming in fear of this little robot that was chasing her. And for anybody who's watching this on YouTube or on the website with the video, hopefully you're seeing cuts of the video of this. I took some video of it, so hopefully I can get that mixed so you can see it. If you're listening to it on audio, it's a two-legged robot that was walking around and people were standing around taking videos like I was. So that was probably the most showy. I mean, there's a giant line for the custom walking Utah teapot that Pixar always does. That was probably one of the longest lines I've ever seen. But like I said, the overall exhibition was not as theatrical as it has been in previous years. It was a lot more subdued in that regard. There was a giant, I think Puget Systems, they do hardware computers and those sort of things. They had a giant sort of interactive sort of mocap-y thing where you fight a bunch of robots. They don't do mocap. They don't actually even do gaming. They sell computer hardware, but it was enough to grab people's attention and have them come and play. That said, about computer hardware, one of the companies that I've been following since BeCon in Austin, Bolt Graphics was there. They had a pretty big booth, and I'm super excited about them, and I'll probably be talking more about them. Hopefully I can have an interview with them later. But for anybody who doesn't know, Bolt Graphics is a company that's been around for a while. They make GPUs. What makes them special is, well, one of their taglines is they're actually putting the graphics back in the GPU. They're actually using GPUs for doing computer graphics. Wow! Wild concept compared to what's been going on with the likes of NVIDIA and even AMD to that regard, on some level. The focus on AI tools has been so pervasive and so lucrative for them that they kind of forgot the whole graphics part of the GPU. And so Bolt Graphics is actually trying to fill that void. And they're doing it in a really smart way. They've got this really cool GPU that's in development. I think they're doing development kits for it coming out by the end of the year. But it's got its own Ethernet port, which is addressable. It's got modular RAM, so you can upgrade the actual RAM on the GPU, which is bonkers and awesome. I can't believe it took someone this long to do it. The GPU actually can run Linux on its own, which is pretty cool. And it has a PCI Express slot on it, so you can actually daisy chain another GPU next to it. It doesn't even have to be it doesn't have to be a Bolt Graphics GPU. It could be anything because it is a PCI Express connected. It could be actually, you can put any PCI Express device on it, I think, which is also pretty cool. And they're getting comparable or I think better performance than the folks who aren't focusing on computer graphics currently at a fraction of the price. So I'm really stoked. Hopefully I can get them on the show and talk more about this because they gave a talk and were a sponsor at BeCon Austin, and they had a nice booth and gave a talk at SIGGRAPH this year. And I continue to be impressed with the people there who are doing that. And I absolutely wish them success. So I want to play with one of these devices too, because I do computer graphics and I like open source and open standards and these sorts of things too. So there we go. So they were there and they did some cool stuff. This year, there was only one Linux-focused booth, and that was Alma Linux. Last year and previous years, I think Ubuntu also had their own booth, but I think they're not as focused on the media and entertainment sector, and I guess they associate the SIGGRAPH conference as being mostly media entertainment, which I think is fair most of the time. This year, there's media entertainment, more on the research side of things, but I had a nice conversation with the folks from Alma Linux about getting things working on their stack and the progress of Wayland. Because actually, I'm still not even using Wayland on my machine. I'm still using X. And that's because a lot of applications have not fully been ported. Though I think Blender has and a number of other ones have as well. And I guess I should probably switch to Wayland at some point and make that happen. But they were also doing things where like they were told that Houdini wasn't going to work in Alma Linux or with Wayland, and they were demoing it. It was cool. And so I kind of talked a little shit, and because I was talking also to the folks at the Wacom booth, which Wacom, they've for a long time been big supporters on the open source side of things. Their support for Linux has been very historically very, very good. But they have one feature. They have these new moving pads, which are basically Android, not basically, they're Android tablets with Wacom technology for the screen. So they have the touch and they have the pen with pressure sensitivity, and it's super cool. But they have this feature called Instant Pen, where you can also use these Android tablets as basically a miniature Cintiq on your desktop. Downside is that only works in Windows and Mac. Is not currently supported in Linux, and there's not really a workaround for it. So I talked a little shit, and I was trying to get, because the folks from Alma Linux were fairly confident they could try and get something that worked, and then the folks at Wacom, while they wanted it to work, they they weren't confident that it was going to. So with any luck, my talking shit could actually get this to happen. And then ideally I'll get folks from both of those organizations on the show and I'll have them talk about how they can get that to work. And that'd be super cool, wouldn't it? That's what we're here for, is to get things working so that when those of us who use open source tools to do our creative output have the ability to do that with the hardware that's available that does cool things. Speaking of really cool hardware, there was, now I've just lost the name of it, and I'll probably just have to put it in the show notes. All of this will be in the show notes, but there was a haptic pin device. Happily? I think it's Happily. It's like Happily without the I, without the extra P and the extra I. So it was just Happily. So it was a haptic pin device where you could do, it would give you resistance in three dimensions for sculpting and those sort of things in 3D while you work. So you could, you know, if you're familiar with 3D sculpting in ZBrush or Blender or any traditional 3D sculpting tools, you're working with a flat 2D interface and you have to move things around and you don't really have feedback. You sort of just have to eyeball it and look at it and do that. And you don't have the sense of depth. And even if you had the sense of depth, you don't have a sense of resistance to that depth. The Happily device does have that. It actually has like little, I guess, reverse servos in it, so that if I have a surface and virtually my virtual cursor goes against that surface, then my physical pin device, that their Happily device, won't let me penetrate it unless I'm actually carving it with a sculpt tool. And then you get a little sort of like haptic resistance. Very cool stuff. I got to play with it a bit in their demo booth and I kind of want to play with it more. And I think there is Linux support for it, but the number of applications that support that device is small. They were using a few older applications actually to do that. So it'd be really cool if they teamed up, sort of like the folks from the 3D Connection space orbit device. They worked with Linux devs on driver support and ultimately with Blender devs on application support to get support for this tool in full 3D space, like in something like Blender. So I'm excited to see something like that happening as well. The NVIDIA booth was entirely related. Sorry, I misspoke. The NVIDIA booth was almost entirely related to AI stuff. So there's OpenClaw was all over their booth and you sort of gated to get in and talk to people about it. There was, I think, one kiosk within their booth that was focused on Unreal. Beyond that, they weren't doing a lot that was like traditional computer graphics stuff. Is more about machine learning tools and those sort of things. And that's one of those things that was a subtext and undercurrent throughout the entirety of the conference, is this whole conversation about machine learning tools. I could say AI, but at this point, again, I'll get in. I still have it slated to do an episode on this, but I'm going to focus on the name of machine learning tools. And there's this underpinning of either there is some level of curiosity, I will say, about these tools and how they work and how they might be of benefit. But by that same token, there was an equal amount of, I don't want to use it, I'm never going to use it, and it shouldn't exist in the world. And then I would say there's a third contingent, which I would say was probably the largest one, which was, it exists and it's there, and I don't know exactly what to think about it. Just from my own anecdotal experience, that was the largest population of people at the show had that kind of mindset and those sort of things. That said, anybody who was more on the development side of things, they were talking a lot more about how they're using LLMs and using those services, not the services, but that technology, particularly for development. In fact, the Kronos Group, they're a nonprofit that is a shepherd for open formats like the GTL, like GTLF, which is an open source interchange format, been traditionally used a lot with respect to WebGL and real-time usage, but it's getting traction as a general interchange format as well. But they're also responsible for things like Vulkan and the Shepherd OpenGL as well. So they're an organization that's focused around that. So it's very, very developer-centric in that regard. The kind of the non-movie related variant of the ASWF. They're more focused on the technological stack and it's closer to the hardware manufacturers, I suppose, than they are to the studios and toolmaker sides of things. But they had a whole series of presentations about the way that they're working and specifically related to how they use machine learning in their thing. And one of the things that I thought that was, well, one, they're definitely using it for development all over the place. And for generating documentation. But one of the things that I found that was very interesting is they are very cognizant of the cost, both the financial cost and the, I'll say the environmental cost of large language models that are running on servers. And so there's an emphasis on how do we save money and time using SLMs, small language models, for very specific things related to documentation or testing or these sort of things. And so they had this whole pipeline that involved using LLMs to define sort of a global spec, which they would tie to an MCP, which is basically an agent, that would do a very specific thing locally with an SLM that does that very specific thing, and then loop that back around to do it. And that allowed them to build documentation and examples for how to use software and libraries that don't exist. They don't have a reference. They're establishing a reference and establishing tests that don't exist yet. And so they're using the tools to do that. And so it's sort of built in through that entire layer. So I will say that the developer community was a lot less in the realm of, I don't know what to think about it. And they're like, all right, well, what can I use it for? And that's where they're sitting with that. And I think that's probably, so just wrapping up, giving my overall impression of SIGGRAPH, still a great conference, still worth going to. I enjoyed the fact, I was a little disappointed initially that it was smaller than it had been in previous years. And it's slowly been shrinking over the years as well. But I think that I don't know if it was a conscious focus from the organizers, but the amount of energy applied to research. Oh, I should have mentioned emerging technologies. I went through that as well. I did enjoy going. Emerging technologies is still one of my favorite sections to go to, where you see all sorts of novel and interesting things that are often very connected to computer graphics, but sometimes very tangentially connected. Like there was one device that was a display that was literally two colors, but the display was coming based on liquid. And so you would have a black oil-based liquid floating at the top and a white, I'm assuming water-based liquid below it. And then this whole array of pumps that was pushing the white liquid through the black to give a display so they could put a smiley face. And it was very sort of maybe 32 pixels by 32 pixels level of detail because this is this giant pump array to make this happen. No applicable purpose for digital production, but I could definitely see it for an art installation or something that would be used in, say, like as a display sort of thing. I guess art installation, whether it's in a gallery or like in a hotel lobby, I could see it being used in that context, some sort of interactive kind of thing that way. I'd be curious to see if that goes any further. But there are a number of those little things at emerging technologies that were kind of cool. And then they had the whole immersive pavilion for doing head-mounted displays. I had to make the hand motion for it. Head-mounted displays and those sort of things. But like I said, overall, I think the size of it, while initially disappointing, I actually really enjoyed seeing all the people that I expected to be there. A few people I didn't expect to be there showed up, and a few people that I would have hoped would have been there didn't show up. I mean, that's sort of to be expected on some level when you have a smaller attendance like this. But I liked being able to more easily find interesting people and talk to them. And I liked the ability to have more interpersonal conversation with vendors at the exhibition. And I liked, like I said, I very much liked the research and technical focus that seemed to be with all the posters and papers and those sorts of things. So those are things that are there. And so next year's conference will be in Anaheim. So it's not like it's that far away from Los Angeles. And I would argue that it's still technically in Los Angeles. So I expect probably attendance may be similarly small as this year, but still probably very much worth going to. So I'm already marking in my calendar as one I want to go to. I'm still trying to decide whether or not I'm going to be able to make it to BCon in Amsterdam this year. I want to make it. I just have to figure out how to make it worth my while, because that's what happens when you're doing stuff all in your lonesome, right? In any case, that is this week's show. SIGGRAPH is great. And if I saw you there, I'm glad I saw you there. If I didn't see you there, I wish I would have seen you there. And maybe I'll see you at the next one. In the meantime, it's time to get to work. See you around.
Job.